Welcome in to another episode of We're Talking. Today we're talking basketball, raging Cajun basketball with longtime Cajun fan Mike Gaber. How are you this morning, Mike?
I'm doing well, trying to stay dry. Looking forward to going over a couple of impressive performances by the Cajuns. It's always fun to talk about success.
Before we get into that, real quick, before we start, you talked about bringing your one of your grandkids to, did you say bus stop?
I bring one the 12-year-old who's actually 12 years old today. Happy birthday, Shia.
Nice.
I bring her to a spot where some lady brings her to the bus stop, and we pick up in the afternoon, and the 2-year-old goes to daycare out in Maurice.
Okay, so they're not standing out in the rain waiting for the bus like when we were kids.
No, actually, when my son left his house this morning, they only live a mile away from me, he made sure to leave the garage door open where I was able to just drive on up, catch him. The 12-year-old might get a little wet running to her friend's house where she leaves for the bus. But the babysitter actually moved her car out of the way where I could park under her little shed there. And so we stayed dry this morning.
Okay. All right. One other thing, just want to give a little shout out to former Raging Cajun Elfert Payton. He's in the G League playing for the Indiana Mad Ants. Elfert, a couple nights ago, had his second triple-double of the season. So Elfert's playing well right now, so good luck to him. Like to see him back in the NBA. So.
Yeah, often at this time of year, teams are allowed to bring up players what they call 10-day contracts, you know, where you have, 13 players to 14 in a roster. You have to have 14 at times. I know the Pelicans just brought a guy up, so that might happen. And the Patriots get an injury or two, they need to get up to their required roster number and play at that level, he might have a chance.
I know when he signed. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That team's doing very well this year. You know, they got to the finals of the in-season tournament, and they've beaten several good teams twice. Indiana's a fun team. They might be one to watch out for when the playoffs come.
Yeah, I know. When it was announced that he signed with Indiana, going on Twitter and looking at the responses to that, it was very positive about Elfert coming to the Pacers. So And as we know, he's a very exciting player. He's getting older for an NBA player, but Elfert still has a lot of spark left in him.
14 was his last year here, so it's been 10 years since he played here.
Yeah,
so, so he's over 30 now.
Was he 21 yet when he left? Because I know he turned 18 in the middle of his freshman year.
Yeah, so, I think he turned 21 after the season.
Yeah, so
right before around the draft time,
but still, fine young man, outstanding member of the community, still does a lot in New Orleans. So, best of luck to Elfert Payton. So,
yeah, congratulations to him.
Let's jump right in, and Mike, I say jump right in. We've been talking for a few minutes already, so that's kind of an oxymoron or whatever that's called, a faux pas or whatever. But Cajuns traveled to Texas State. If I can tell you from experience, if you haven't been to Texas State, whether it be for football, baseball, softball, or basketball, you need to go. Beautiful area, fun time. Fans are always nice. Get a little rowdy during the game, but it's a great place to go watch a ball game, no matter the sport. So let's jump right into that first half, Mike.
Okay, I will say give kudos to the administration for the travel arrangements. There was a charter bus that became available, not a charter bus, a charter plane flight became available rather unexpectedly, you know, just a couple of weeks before the game. And with school starting and the freeze, a lot of kids hadn't been to class yet, so they found a way to make it work with the administration and basketball staff. So they flew to San Marcos Tuesday afternoon. During that day, there was so much freeze. And then we were able to fly back right after the game. I have a couple of friends that went to the game and said they were home by midnight. And then that allowed the kids to go to class on Thursday and Friday. And then it was an easy bus trip to Mobile for the second game. Would have been a lot more difficult, you know, with the commercial travel and bus trips they had planned. And they also saved a couple of hotel nights. So, you know, it cost them a little bit, but economically feasible. So kudos to the administration for helping the team out that way. Talking to other people, that they really think that travel arrangements really helped their performance in both games.
And also, saves on the worrying and sitting in an airport, especially with that deep freeze that hit the South here, flights being canceled and all that across the country. So
that's right. Yeah,
yes.
There would have been a couple of, there would have been some layovers involved, and much simpler where you can fly right in there.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. But anyway, so I think that put the team in a good mood. When I was listening to Jay in pregame, I heard that Brandon Love, Texas State's best inside player, was not going to play because he tried to play, but I guess during pregame warmup, I forget what the injury was, but he couldn't go. He did play the next game. So that told me the Cajuns should have an advantage, at least getting the ball inside. And it turned out to be the case as the game went on. But in the first few minutes of the game, man, I said, this is not what I'm Texas State team I'm looking used to looking at. They were shooting the ball with 15, 20 seconds left on the shot clock, shooting quick. I think that sort of surprised the Cajuns. In the first 5 minutes, I think both teams scored an 80% of the first few possessions. So, you know, even a game getting being a blowout, that wasn't necessarily the case in the first few minutes, making you think it was going to be that way, especially with the Bobcats shooting the ball quicker than they had in the past. They were shooting some mid-range. They don't shoot a lot of threes, but they were making them. Then early in the half, I guess about halfway to go, Kobe got his second foul. And usually, you know, when that happens, you go to the bench and you don't play the rest of the half. But, you know, we only have eight players available. So the staff did a great job, I thought, of spot playing Kobe, you know, putting him in timeouts where we're going to be on offense. And he was also careful on defense. You know, he didn't get his third, so that helped. And I've mentioned this several times before, and then even in this game, you know, the games are generally a feeling out process till you get to be about 20 points. And both teams were scoring. And, you know, are they going to lulls? Normal game. But, you know, we got a transition three off a miss from Michael Thomas, and then Thomas got to the basket, you know, without their big guy there, and he got an and one, and all of a sudden a 1 point lead is seven. And at that point, without Love, I felt pretty comfortable. Yeah, you know, and then we got into a stretch of play where I don't think the Cajuns can play any better. Granted, their opponent was out man, but, you know, from the last 10 minutes of the first half and going into the second half, they were outstanding. They use their defense to transition to the offense. That often happens, you know. I have a friend who was at the game, and he said, we just smothered them. As Texas State was driving the ball for their mid-range, all of a sudden those shots were not open. We probably had a good game plan from the coaches who had scouted them, because every time they drive in now, what was early open early in the half was no longer open. They were getting doubled, you know, and they kicked it out some, and covered those as well. So we were able to get some steals and get some rebounds. I like this. We were running off misses with rebounds and pushing it. And Kobe and Thiemus were able to get into the lane without Brandon Love in there. And here's a key thing, too. You know, they were the previous game for the Cajuns, it was the game that Hosanna had 25, I think, was at Arkansas State?
Yes. Sorry about that.
Yeah. And well, so they were doubling him. And then, okay, but what he did was he'd start in the lane and he'd move away from the lane and the double would follow him. And all of a sudden, the lane's right open for Thiemus and Kobe to get to the basket. So good move there. I think our lead got to be 15 and a half. I think it was 44-29. That's a good score. You're holding them under 30, scoring over 40. You know, college basketball, you get in the 80s, you usually win. You hold your opponent under 70, you usually win. So 15-point lead at half. We're playing well. Kobe's not in foul trouble. He only got two. Again, kudos to the staff for spot playing him, and good job. And figured we're gonna have some the three guys off the bench will play a lot in the second half. If we can separate, and ultimately we did. So I'm sure all the Cajun fans, and you got a 15-point lead in that situation, you're feeling pretty good.
Yeah, you know. It's you look at everything there again, and I think what really helped the Cajuns in the first half was the 6 for 12 shooting from the 3-point line. If you're going to hit 50% of your shots from the 3-point line, I'd rather be in the first half and kind of get out to that lead and not coast, but at the same time put pressure on the other team. And you talked about outmanning the other team, but at the same time, we've seen not just with the Cajuns, but in basketball games, even if you're outmanning your opponent, you tend to get sloppy and you tend to not play your game. So that was good to see the Cajuns continue that play on through the second half, which we'll get to in a second.
Yeah. So second half starts, and first 10, 15 minutes was a continuation of the last 5-10 minutes of the first half. They continue to extend the lead by running off misses and turnovers. We get into the basket or hit an open transition threes. I don't know if the Cajuns could play any better than they did in the 20 to 25 minutes. It was almost perfect basketball. Of course, the opponent's going to make a basket now and then. But, you know, when you be able to score off your defense, you know, it really helps you because you don't have to worry about your half-court offense. Sometimes, you know, our half-court offense will get stagnant if the outside shots are not falling. But you don't need to worry about that. And Kobe had a few rebounds, and he was able to push it off misses. And we continued to smother him. Part of that was our three-quarter court trap, you know, where we put Joe at the top. It's like a 1-2-2. And, you know, and then if you get the ball and try to get it across court, you're trapped again with some other quick guards. Three times in the game, and maybe might have been all in the second half, at least maybe one in the first half, two in the second half, the Cats had shot clock violations. And, you know, historically, they want to run the clock, but that wasn't necessarily the case here. They just couldn't get a shot off. There was nowhere, no open shot available. And then when we did go to post off, Kobe was effective. You know, he's been playing really well lately since that early conference start. They were actually posting him up, and he was able to score. He's got a great bank shot. He continued that at South Alabama. Really fun play for those who haven't seen this is, if you want to go back and watch it, when we're in that trap, they do break the trap, but Hosanna gets a steal near the basket. He goes coast to coast, dribbles behind his back, and lays it up. And our bitch is going crazy. They're in the middle of that run, you know. All these positive things I said about, you know, the league got to 35, 70 to 45. And, you know, I'm one of the things I'm never putting the game in the win column until I'm sure there's going to win. Now, usually it comes with 20-point lead late into the second half. And it was 35 with, I don't know, 7-8 minutes to go. You know, no worries at that point. Now, like you said earlier, though, you know, what's going to happen at that point? You know, human nature is you're going to relax a little bit, you know. So I wasn't too surprised that the game got a little sloppy. I'm sure you weren't either.
No. You know, you look at it, everything, and this is a game that you would think on paper would give the opportunity for a player to kind of break out. But with five players in double figures and two more at 8 points, so just scratching at the door for double figures. And then you got one of them coming off the bench, London Fields, who honestly, you know, 11 points in 12 minutes, you're going to take that from any bench player any day. But a player that's seemed limited action really throughout the year. So,
yeah,
wait for him to step up like that.
Yeah, with Butler no longer the team and Hardy injured, London has the opportunity, and he took advantage of it that day. Yeah, and I know the coaches were pleased with his performance that day. But another reason the game got a little sloppy too, you know, we had we're playing without any of our big men. We didn't have Joe, Kobe, or Hosanna in the last 5-6 minutes of the game. You know, Radley was playing it inside, and we're basically playing with four guards. So sometimes when the shot clock runs down, you don't have your big guy to throw it into. You know, it makes it a little tough, and that's one reason I think the game got sloppy. But you know, it was a 15-point lead at halftime. I was really happy to see us Cantrell hit a 3-pointer late in the game. And you know why? That allowed us to win the second half. Allowed us to win the second half. Yeah, so we won both halves, won by 18, led by 15 at halftime. So I know coaches really didn't mind. Maybe they got something to go fuss at, you know, for the preparation for South Alabama. But I hate finishing the game on a bad note. I think maybe winning a half maybe set us up for success in the next game. So I'm sure you got a chance to look at the stats. Beyond London Fields, what else did was of significance to you?
Well, I think the main thing is holding their team to 0 for 8 shooting from 3-point line in the second half and 1 for 13 for the game. So below 8% shooting for the game. And, you know, you let them score 43% from the field, but you're going to take that any time if you're holding a team 3-pointers like that. The other big thing that I continue – a little bit continues to amaze me. I know we were out rebounded this game by two rebounds. But at the same time, when you can score 42 points in the paint, you're doing something right. So yeah,
some of that came off transition. Some of that's Kobe and Hosanna, spotting up and posting. You know, you, some transition, you get it out of the basket from running off of misses and off of turnovers. The one for 13 is a key. I'll said this before. It was a team from last week. The Cajuns, I think, focused on limiting people's 3-point shot because the analytics indicate, you know, that's a lot of teams want to take them. Texas State takes about 15 a game. We held them to below that. And remember, some of those threes that they took probably were late in the shot clock. They had three shot clock violations. So good job by the defense. You know, as far as the guys who played a lot, team has had a double-double. You know, I don't know if he's had many this year, but 10 assists and double-figure scoring. So I know he had a couple of too many turnovers, but anyway, that again goes back to my initial point. They didn't have Brandon Love, who's their inside player, sort of a rim protector. That allowed us to get to the lane. You talked about some of the bench guys. You know, all eight players who played scored at least three baskets. That's very unusual. Every player who played got at least three baskets. So,
I like the way this team is rounding out coming in to the not quite the stretch run, I don't believe, but we've played at this point six Sunbelt games. So the key is going to be to stay healthy. So,
yep, that's the key with, you know, with the eight guys. Now, if all eight guys stay healthy, I think we'll be fine. We've got to avoid that injury bug. So the team comes back, like I said, on Wednesday night. People are home at a decent hour. Kids go to class Thursday and Friday. I think they left for Mobile on a, which is what, about a 3.5-4 hour bus trip. Not a bad trip. Friday afternoon, you know, got to the hotel. Probably had a, I don't know if they were able even to practice. They might have practiced. I know they practiced Thursday with a 2:30. It was going to be a 3 o'clock game. Didn't start till almost 3:30 because their latest game went a little late. That actually worked out well for me because I was out of town for most of that morning. I got back right at the tip-off. And so, South Alabama. South Alabama was playing pretty well. They had an emotional game on Thursday night where they played Troy. They had a good crowd for that game. You know, of course, those are the two teams with in-state and the Sun Belt. And I don't know if that was Troy's first loss or second loss. Might have been, but anyway, they hadn't many losses in the game, and it went right down to the wire. South Alabama won by three, made some big free throws right at the end. South Alabama had the lead most of the game. Troy challenged them late. So you're wondering, okay, how much emotion and effort displayed against Troy was going to hurt them against the Cajuns? Well, the first 2 minutes actually worked the opposite. I think South Alabama was still on a high from that Troy win. They were very confident, you know, scored the first 7 points of the game with inside, outside, couple of free throws. And Hosanna missed a couple of free throws early, you know, to try to stop the run. But then Kobe hits a three, you know, a deep one. They leave him open on the wing, and he buries it. And all of a sudden, we score 9 points, and it's a game. You know, from 7-0, we're ahead 9-7. And it's pretty much a dogfight for most of the first half. The Jags had success. They're a big guard-oriented team. A left-handed guy named Gator, another guy named Tabby who plays bully ball. They're able to put some pressure on teams, and unlike the Texas State game where he was able to get to the basket, it was more difficult to get him to the basket. And, you know, we turned it over a few too many times. And they had the lead by a few points for most of the first half until late in the half. This Gator guy transferred from Assumption. He's left-handed. And, you know, if you play basketball, you know, most time you cut off people going to the right if you can. But going against a left-hander who's got the handle he has was difficult. And a couple of times when, you know, the Cajuns have their big men on top on some of the switches, and Hosanna was guarding him, and there was no way he could. And Joe guarded him a few times. That was much more effective, but you know, I'm talking here like everything's going South Alabama's way. Remember, Cajuns are staying close here, but they're late in the game, late in the half, rather, that 1-2-2 quarter, three-quarter court trap where Joe at the top turns the game around for the Cajuns. You know, we get a couple of layups and got the lead, or if we're not, they're taking more time on the shot clock than they want to before they get their shot off. And we get the, I think we go to a 5-point lead. And here's a critical play that was negative for the Cajuns, but turned out to be positive. 20 seconds or so left. Michael Thomas is in, handling the ball. Good play made by Jag. Steals the ball for him, lays it up. Thomas follows him in case he misses us. And a really smart play by Thomas. He lets him have the layup. He doesn't compound his third over by fouling him. You know, guy, that happens. The guy makes an and one. The crowd's into it. So, you know, the 5-point lead went to three. But, you know, smart play there by Mike. You know, just let him have the basket. We talked about that before. If you can't stop, sure, you're going to stop with, the basket with a foul. Don't let him have an and one.
Exactly. And we you know, I think that was about two or three episodes ago we talked about that. So, I like to see it. A question for you, though. It's been a while since I played basketball and everything, but for you, how difficult is to guard a left-handed player versus what you're used to with a right-handed player?
Extremely difficult, because at my age, when I play a little pickup ball, so I don't embarrass myself, I always cut off the guy going to his right, and I'll yell, help. And I'll say, help me left. And now that's completely opposite. You've got to cut off the guy going to his left and say, help me right. And beyond that, look, the guy's good, though. He can go to his right, too, but he's left-handed and goes to his left. It's just, that's not used to that. That's unusual.
Yeah. Okay.
So, the guy's averaging 17 a game. He's one of the, he's only going to be at Alabama once a year. I think he's a grad transfer, but you know, he's going to help the Jags going forward. All right, so we're up three. The second half comes. Early in the half, the game stays tight. I don't think the Cajuns ever lost the lead, but they really couldn't separate. You know, it goes 3-5 points most of the half. Early in the half, Kobe gets his third foul. But, you know, the best inside player the Jags have is a guy named Howell, who's a transfer from ULM. He also gets his third foul. So that offset each other, you know, and both teams have to deal with that. I think Kobe got his first, you know, and that was a big advantage. But soon thereafter, Kyle got his third. But then the Cajuns are able to grow the lead in one key play where we force a 10-second call, you know, where our trap comes up and they don't even get the ball across half court. And we're also dominating the glass, you know, in, because of that 10-second call, and we're dominating the glass. We're able to extend out to a 10-point lead. And the Jags just can't match up. They're inside, you know, they're heavily guard-oriented team. The guard named Tommy can get inside if we guard him one-on-one with another guard because he's so strong. But, you know, there was one possession, this might have been in the first half going back, where one of the Jags backup big man who's pretty good at blocking shots blocked like three times in a row, but our guys were always hustling and grabbing the missed shot. He wasn't able to knock it to his own guy, and London Fields ended up grabbing it and knocking it off the glass. I think I fairly missed that in the first half, but that's an example how we dominated the glass in the game. They just couldn't match up with Hosanna. I know at the end of the game, their shooting percentage might have been a little higher than ours, but if you did points per possession, sometimes we'd have three or four shots and we'd end up scoring. Hosanna, I think, was 7 for 17, but I know there's at least two possessions where he shot three times before he finally scored. Once he just pushed the ball up like a volleyball and shot and knocked it off the glass. You know, matchups are a big part of basketball. With his strength and his size, they just can't match up with him. Our guards have trouble matching up with their guards, but they can't match up with us inside. And Kobe had another great game where he's using his feet well. Coach Marlin mentioned in an interview I heard recently that he's gone up off 2 feet. I've heard other coaches say that. When you're near the basket, if you go up off 1 foot, your odds of making the basket are much less. And he's being very patient. And Kobe Julian is one of the best players I've seen when he's on using the glass. He's got a nice soft touch off the glass. I wish more players would use the glass. When I do play basketball, and obviously I can't post up, but sometimes I'll position myself to actually make a bank shot from 10 feet or so at a slight angle. And people look at me like, he can do that. But Kobe is excellent hitting the ball off the glass. So when we had to go to half court, he was able to do that. And, you know, unlike the first half, we're able to stop him from going left. We put Joe on him a little more when we're in a half court. And all of a sudden, it's a 10-point lead and you're feeling pretty comfortable. But of course, that's not going to last. The Jags have a lot of pride. They playing on their home court. They had some confidence from winning a close game against Troy. We turned the ball over a few times. And, you know, the lead is down to 5-6 points from 10. But there's a deep, maybe a couple of minutes to go, two things happen. Cantrell makes a deep three. That almost puts the game away. And then something that's probably near and dear to old-time Cajun fans' hearts. In the last 2 to 3 possessions in the last minute, the Cajuns go to a 1-3-1 defense. And it's unusual the way we did it. We put Joe Charles at the top in that 1-3-1 where he's got such long arms. And, you know, you can trap him with Timas, you know, and if he goes one way, you trap the other way if it goes with Hosanna. Another key guy is Kentrell Garnett. Your guy who's in the 1-3-1's got to be able to really run the baseline from one end to the other when the ball goes to the corners. And Kentrell did a great job. The Jags did score a three off one of those possessions, but it was late in the clock. And, you know, we're wanting them to run the clock. And the next time they shoot a very contested three, and we got it. I think we ran the defense on 3 possessions, and they only scored once. That reminds me back when I was a kid with Bola Moore was at the top of the 1-3-1 and Jerry Bisman was in the back and Roy Huron was in the middle. It's a very traditionally field defense for us. And I bet we see a little more going forward.
I hope so. I know Coach Marlin's he recruits guys that play defense and that play man-to-man defense specifically. So Ron Hunter at when he was at Georgia State telling guys, you don't have to play man to man here. You're going to play zone. All you have to do is worry about shooting.
So. He does the same at Tulane, and it worked for them against Memphis.
Yeah.
I think Coach Zimmerman may be the one who might be pushing for this. We're going to play mostly man to man. I think we'll use it strategically like we did in the Sod Owl game when it makes sense for 2 to 3 possessions. Especially if we hadn't done it the whole game. So the defense was strong there and the offense wasn't able to be effective for.
How surprised were you that, we had 16 offensive rebounds in this game and probably, like you said, probably tapping stuff up and trying
volleyball,
to get
volleyball type.
Of effort. But they only had 4 rebounds. And then we out-rebounded them, 4 offensive rebounds, I'm sorry. We out-rebounded them 39-22. Coming into the season, knowing that the Cajuns were limited in height, could you have expected that, 39-22 out-rebounding a team like South Alabama?
No, but another key on that was Howell, the transfer from ULM's, their best inside player. He only played 24 minutes. He only had 2 rebounds. That's the key. I think part of that was he wasn't aggressive because he was sort of like Kobe was going in and out with his 4. Like I forgot to mention, Kobe got his 4th on a charge. That was maybe questionable, but I think it was a good call. And South Alabama's pretty excited there. Kobe's to the bench. Next thing you know, just like when they both got their 3 within a minute of each other, Howell got his 4th because Cajuns were really smart there. They ran the ball inside to Kozana, posted him up. Very patient till they got his spot. You know, I think Hosanna might only made 1 of the 2 free throws, but Howell had to go right back to the bench. So we lose one of our key guys. They lose one of their key guys, and that's maybe a factor why they didn't rebound as well. And they're a guard-oriented team. It's a matchup thing. So if we play them again, and I'm sure we will, we do play them again in a few weeks, watch to see if Howell stays out of foul trouble. I want to mention this, too. We've talked a lot about Joe Charles being a really good defensive player throughout this game. You know, with his guarding Gator, and he's at the top of the 1-3-1, and he's at the top of the 1-2-2. 1 point at halftime, and I thought he was the most critical player in the game, and I was watching it. He ends up with 22. I know the coaches have said he had to score a little bit more in the second half, and he scored every which way. He got some layups in transition, got a couple of threes, you know, got a couple of passes off other people right at the basket. It was an outstanding game by Joe. Reminded me of his Coastal Carolina game. If you look at his stat line, it's pretty efficient. Did a little bit of everything, you know, 22 points, 9 rebounds, 3 steals, 2 blocks. Pretty good day, huh?
Yeah, and, you know, the part there that I won't say amazes me, but that stands out is that he only got 2 fouls in the game. A lot of times when he's got those longer arms, he reaches, and I think he does a very good job of it, but the referees will tend to call a foul. So staying out of foul trouble at the same time, especially with Kobe in foul trouble, I think was a very much a key in the success of the Cajuns.
Yeah, you look at the stats. You talk about the rebounds. We also shot more free throws than the Jags. And some of that because in the last couple of minutes, was, you know, where they're following us. But that was very late before that happened. not very often this year where we shoot more free throws than the opponent. They don't get as many rebounds as we do. We get a lot more rebounds than they did. And we turn over more than the opponent. But I'm pretty sure the points off turnovers are about the same, and it was only one difference. We had 14, they had 13.
You know, but and that's, you know, you look at everything. Bench scoring's just about even. Second chance points, we held them only to 4 points off the second chance. We gave up, in my opinion, a little too many fast break points at 20. So, but
yeah, some of that got out of turnovers. Yeah. But the rebound story's maybe hidden a little bit where they're hit right at 50%. We were right below 50. But points per possession, you know, if you put that in there, or baskets per possession, we would have been above 50%, because there are several times we had 2 and 3 shots, including the time, you know, that the Fields ended up making a bank shot. So pretty strong effort there. So now we come home. So what are we going to do at home, Craig?
That's, you know, I think it's very interesting. We Texas State, we play Arkansas State first, which is a team. I'm still not sold on Arkansas State yet. Am I looking at the schedule right?
Arkansas State tomorrow night at 7:30. The women play first at 5. So the men are going to start a little later at 7:30. And it's Texas State at 7 on Saturday. The women do play Saturday, but being on the weekend, they play at 2, I believe. So there's no need for the men to start a little later.
No, Arkansas State played a tough non-conference schedule. They're 4-3 in the league, same as the Cajuns. I think it's going to be a very exciting game. Again, I think we play similar styles, so it'll be interesting to see how this turns out. With 6 games at home for the Cajuns in a row, not ideally. I think we talked a little bit before, you know, trying to steal a game or two on the road, but when the Cajuns go out and take 3 out of 4, I think that's got to boost the confidence of the team, and especially doing it defensively is going to be a key again with Arkansas State in coming into the game.
Agreed. Arkansas State shoots even more threes than the Cajuns. The key to the first game was we held them to 4 for 22 from 3. The 22 is a key number. They like to get above a 30. I was talking to someone the other day. Their coach is a disciple of Nate Oates from Alabama, and they have a huge analytics section. It was very similar in the NBA. Threes and dunks and mid-range, if it's a short mid-range. But in the first game, they were well scouted. The reason they went 4 for 22 was whenever they penetrated the lane and they passed it back out for a three, the Cajuns actually went back out and guarded the three really well. And Fields got to the basket. He's there, I think his number 0 guards really well. He got to the basket several times. He had 17 points. In this game, I would suspect they're going to maybe not kick it back out as much if they know that, and he'll go to the basket even more.
I agree.
So you might see Joe guard him at times instead of Themis or Cantrell. Cantrell, I think, guarded him most of the time last game, and he got to the lane some. He scored 17. Their other big guys, Dominguez, he shoots a lot of threes as well. He had a double-figure game in the last game. By the way, Arkansas State and Texas State played Saturday. It was a close game. Arkansas State had a slight lead at halftime. With 7 minutes to go, it was tied. You know, Cats kept trying to come back on him, and Arkansas State was only had 4 with 2 minutes to go, and Texas State had the ball, then scored. They were able to put it away at the free throw line. So, but they got up their 31 threes in that game. I think they made 11, which is, you know, right at 30-some percent, and that could be a higher percentage, but that's what they want to do. They want to get up above 30. So we stopped the 3 ball on the road. Fields got to the basket. They'll do more that Thursday. What they also did was they didn't double Hosanna much. You know, we made some more threes in that game than they did. They doubled him some. He kicked it out, and we made a couple of threes, and they tried to guard him one-on-one, and he had 25 points. He had a really good game. He even made some spinning shots in the middle, you know, in mid-range himself. I suspect in this game they're going to double him, and even if we make a couple of threes, they're going to keep doubling him. You expect to see something similar yourself?
Yeah, exactly. I think that goes back to the prior game at Troy where Hosanna struggled a little bit coming off the flu and everything. So I think they didn't see him at his had his strength, so they decided to go a different way. I Ozanne had 25 points in the game, the first game against Arkansas State. Huge 10 for 15 from the field. So I don't expect that again out of him. So, but yeah, at the same time, if we do, happy.
Well, he's improved a lot at passing the ball. He's a good passer. Sometimes he just needs to make a point to recognize when doubles come, and he's improved tremendously. Speaking of Hosanna, some of the things we've been talking about here, Kevin Foote is saying some similar things in an article that features Hosanna in today's Acadiana Advocate. So if you, a lot of people don't have the hard copy anymore, I still do, but go to the Advocate's online website, see if you can read that article by Kevin and Hosanna. And also understand, I learned yesterday that he's going to have family in town for the game Saturday. So he'll be excited. So hopefully not too excited. I've seen players maybe can't control their emotions when they have family in town. So it's going to be a good game. The Cajun bench needs to step up. You know, we've got three guys. We've been playing them. In the last game against Texas State, the Arkansas State bench had 30 points, over 30 points. So, you know, our three guys are going to have to step up and match that. Should be a good game tomorrow night. I'm looking forward to it. I'll say one more thing. In the game against Texas State, Caleb Fields was a little off. He didn't do as play well as he did against us. They had another guy named Feltz who hit 5 for 7 from the field. So, like a lot of teams in the Sun Belt, they're guard-oriented, and their big guy, Dominguez, also shoots threes. So that's Thursday. The Texas State game on Saturday scares me a little bit, and the reason is, you know, we're going to have a tough game Thursday against Arkansas State, where both teams shot a lot of threes. Historical rival. You know, we've been playing them for longer than we've been playing Texas State. But Texas State has to be embarrassed knowing that we had a 35-point lead on them in the game last Wednesday. They're going to be ready for us.
You know, I agree with you. But to me, I kind of feel like Texas State, I think their coach is under pressure right now, quite honestly. And I'm not going to get into coaches being fired and all that, but I think he's under a little bit of pressure right now to do well. And it looked like he kind of changed what they did well to match up with the Cajuns. I think if that happens again, if they try to match the Cajuns faster gameplay, they will get beat again. If they have to play Texas State's game to win, in my opinion.
Yeah. I noticed when I look at their stats, you know, they're scoring above 70 points a game now. And they for years, they were in the 60s. So they're not a team that wants to play in the 80s. So maybe they're not sure what they want to do. They're not sure if they want to play as slow as they did or what their pace is going to be. But they're going to have their best player, inside player, Love, Brandon Love, back on Saturday. And we didn't have him to go against him the first game. We got to the lane. We'll see if we can do that when he's playing. In the first game, their best guard, Mason, we held him to 12 points. But he had 21 against Arkansas State, so he bounced back. They only took nine 3-point shots against the Wolves, but they shot 24 free throws, which tells me they got, and they were behind most of the game, so they got to the lane, in the lane, and probably got to the basket. So again, the key is attitude here. Just because you were a 35-point lead over them the first time, you can't take any opponent lightly. You have to respect everyone.
Absolutely.
Say this about the homestand in general. I was real, and I've said this on social media, and I can't say it enough. Okay, so you won 3 straight on the road. Now you're coming home. You're feeling pretty good. At this stage of the season, you can't assume just because you're playing at home you're going to win. You have to do all the other things you normally do in preparation, scouting your opponent ready, getting your body rested, and be prepared to play regardless of where the game at. The game's at. You know, we won 3 in a row on the road. Other teams are winning some games on the road, too. ULM won a road game the other day at Old Dominion, which leads the league in attendance. So I can't say it enough. Just because you're at home doesn't mean you're going to win. I expect the opponents to give us good matchups on both Thursday and Saturday.
Yes. I'm this is going to be my first time back out at the Cajun Dome since before Christmas. So I'm excited to get back out, watch some basketball live, and cheer on the Cajuns to victory, hopefully.
Yep. I know other people are just saying I'm being a little skeptical. You know, we're not going to lose. You know, we lost our one game. I don't even think about that. I just say, play the game in front of you and then worry about the one after. But, you know we need to do against Arkansas State. Stop their 3-ball. That's the main thing. We do that, we'll have a good chance.
Absolutely. Any final thoughts on anything before we sign off, Mike?
Next week is going to be Wednesday, Saturday, Thursday, Saturday this week. It's Wednesday, Saturday next week. So I know six home games in a row may be a little much for people to have other their own things going on in life. But try to make a few of them if you can is what I'll encourage the fans to do. I will say, talking to a friend the other day, he said, you know, he brings people to the games occasionally, and I do too, and they generally always come back because they're entertained with what they see. And you can't promise that the team will win. You never can know how any team or game will come out, but I can say they're probably going to be well prepared. They'll play hard, and they'll pull for each other.
You know, you brought up the next week, Wednesday, Saturday, and the following week is going to be Wednesday, Sunday. We now know our opponent, Bowling Green. Not getting into them, but have you heard anything on a start time yet for that one?
I've heard it could be anywhere from 2 to 7.
Okay. Well, that's
and all there's the Mardi Gras function actually on the Cajun Dome floor Saturday night, and it just depends how quickly they can get things going. I think ideally the team would like to play at 3, but you know, the setup time is huge. And other people say, why don't we play at Blackham? Well, Mardi Gras weekend, you got a whole bunch of trailers in front of Blackham Coliseum, parades right in front of there. So that's not really feasible. Coach Marlin mentioned in a radio interview with Kevin Foote earlier in the week that they're really looking at how they're going to do this MAC Sunbelt Challenge. You know, we're sending our women in a non-conference game all the way to, I don't know, Michigan or something that week. That Saturday, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So there's either going to be a look at either maybe playing only one game per year. Some people like two, but let's play November, December versus this thing in the middle of conference season. I don't think any of the teams like that. I know we had Cajun Dome issues this year in December, but that shouldn't be the case going forward.
But you could almost do it, maybe not the first game of the year, but the second or third, give the guys a little warm-up. Do one and then do one right before conference play starts. It would be a nice tune-up for conference play. Instead of going on the road to Marshall, we may be going to Bowling Green or something like that.
Before. Right, you could have put the two games together in one trip or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, right now I think the plan is to still play two games next year. Coach Marlin indicated it could be a November-December thing next season. Hopefully so. We're going to get to Bowling Green a little bit more earlier. And I was surprised that was our opponent. I said, I know we're headed up on the standings, but we're 4-3, which is fifth place. Bowling Green, I think, is second. They've only lost one conference game. But I was told the way they tried to match up teams was by the net rating, which basically is a replacement for the old RPI.
Yeah. You
know, we're third in our league in the net ranking right now. They're third in their league in the net ranking. And that's how they matched them up.
Okay. That's how I was going to say that. I thought that was the way when they announced it, that how it would be done. So, I hope personally, I hope they stay at two games.
Me too. I hope that what they do, instead of forgetting about this, who not knowing, figure out who your opponent is right at the beginning of the season. Okay. If you're first or second in your league, play the first and second place teams in the other league, one early, one late. Just do it that way instead of trying to figure it out in the middle of the season. Because this is going to be tough for Bowling Green as well. You know, they're playing on a Sunday night, and, you know, perhaps, hopefully Sunday afternoon. But think of their kids, you know, they got to get back and go back to class, you know, make tough. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't know why they came up with this idea. But I like the idea. Just got to tweak it. We'll talk more about that as we get closer to that game.
I think all of that has to do, honestly, Mike, we're the only school in the country that has to worry about Mardi Gras. Not the only school in the country, but having a facility that hosts Mardi Gras balls. You know, South Alabama mobilizing big Mardi Gras, but they play their campuses away from downtown. So we're the only ones that has to worry about that type of deal. And to your point, Bowling Green is probably flying back Monday morning because at this point, we still don't have a game time. And we know that, you know, I don't know what time the last flight out is of Lafayette, but even if we play at 3 o'clock and they're done at 5, there's no way they can get to the airport by 6, which is probably the last flight out.
You're right. Yeah, Mardi Gras is an issue. That's another indication of why having our own arena we can control would be maybe beneficial, but that's many years away. But at least it's being talked about by some people who follow basketball. And again, you know, it's tough. Even if we had played on Saturday, Bowling Green just didn't know they're going to play us till Monday. You know, they have to wait the last second to make hotel reservations. I just don't like the whole plan, period. I hope it will improve next year.
Yeah, and because the travel plans, flight plans are also going to be more expensive. The one thing that I would say that, and I don't think you could do them, with our women playing their women and everything, is to make sure that both the Cajun's men and Cajun women are out of town on that Mardi Gras weekend is the only way to do it, to where we wouldn't have to worry about the Cajun Dome issue.
I think the women have played on Saturday afternoons before, but maybe there wasn't a ball. So there's a lot of activities for Mardi Gras in the Cajun Dome, but some of them are in the convention center or some of the ballrooms. But this is actually, I think, on the Cajun Dome floor, whatever's happening on this year.
It is. The only thing that, like I said, it would be nice to make that accommodation. I just hope whatever they decide, that it's able to work out and that we play two games. I think it helps both schools with scheduling. So.
Yep, and I like the MAC Sun Belt Challenge because it helps you get another home game. It just didn't work out an ideal time that we're playing it on Super Bowl Sunday and Mardi Gras weekend this year. But usually that's not going to be the case. If we do stay at two games and something similar to what's going on this year, we'll be playing the MAC game in November next year. It'll
Okay.
be opposite. Yeah, all the Sun Belt schools will host the early game and all the MAC schools will host the late game. Let's just hope it's November, December versus November, February.
Exactly. All right, Mike. Appreciate it. We'll get into this MAC challenge a little bit more in a couple weeks. But fun talking about it and fun talking about scheduling and how all that works. And I think people forget so much about the Cajun Dome and the disadvantage that we have. Beautiful facility. So come out the next 3 weeks. Come on out Thursday, Saturday this week, Wednesday, Saturday the next week, and then Wednesday, Sunday the following week. So
Okay, Craig, look at we'll get together next week and hopefully talking about two more Cajun victories.
absolutely, Mike. Appreciate it as always. For Mike Hebert, I'm Craig Melanson. You've been listening, we're talking. We've been talking basketball. Raging Cajun basketball with longtime Cajun fan, Mike Hebert.
Any redistribution or reproduction of any part or all of the contents in any form is prohibited, except, who the hell are we kidding? Distribute it, share it, put it in your podcast, broadcast it, or put it on social media. Just give credit where credit's due.